More on this Gösta Karlsson case, and headline. Nightly experiences, on another level of consciousness, as the Danish wise man Martinus calls the night consciousness. As in many other contact cases, it did not stop there. Mr. Gösta Karlsson's experience was not pure observations. Instead, it continues to develop into a more and more strange event. What initially seems simple and relatively straight observations, gradually becomes more complicated and elusive. When Gösta Karlsson comes home early this morning, after the visit to the clearing, awaiting everyday life with work and family, what happened a few hours before is admittedly amazing and strange, but the meeting in the glade starts still to fade as memory after only one day. Perhaps he had simply forgotten all about it, if it were not for a series of dreams that would never be let go on him. Actually, it's not right to call Gösta Karlsson experiences as dreams. Instead, it seems that somehow he changes his mind's status, mind, level, perhaps influenced by anyone or anything. The nightly experiences will become very real. The origin of those, well, let us call it dreams for now. It seems to be the device that the guard directed at him as he approached the craft. The box camera with the weird lens might have a different function than Gösta first thought. The first dream take place as early as 2 days after the observation on May 20, 1946. When evening comes and Gösta late asleep, he feels how the body becomes paralyzed and how he slides into a strange state of consciousness. All afternoon I have felt a little heavy in the head and also unusually hot. I'm starting to think it's the flu at the time, although it is something I have never really a sensing of. In the evening I take a medicine and drink some honey water and falls asleep into a strange half trance. Then something happens. Suddenly I stare into the guard postal cam, like thing hanging in a strap on his chest. So widens the room and just like on a television set, the light and I are now in a room with lots of instruments. In front of me sits a male in a red armchair, the back of which is richly decorated and I can recognize a city that could be London, New York or any other major city anywhere. On his right sits a backlit screen that Gösta have difficulty understanding the meaning of, but which he will later be likened to a television. Something that did not exist in Sweden, 1946. Regularly broadcasts began in 1957. On the screen appears a line and a point that the driver continuously adjusts the sucker of a steering wheel. To the left of him is a second screen for anything that looks out of the messaging constantly flowing in. Type characters reminiscent of Arab or Jewish, but extremely smooth, as written on a data machine. They move from our left to right on the screen, sometimes 6, 7 rows above each other. Then turns the driver suddenly around, and says, "Manji, I switch on the autopilot, you want to check that the course is okay?" A beautiful woman's face with hair combed back and trimmed in a so, called 30, clip, emerges on his left screen into a stunning three-dimensional shape as if she myself were in the room. Later, he learns that she is in a different part of the craft. When Gösta sees her, she sits with eyes closed and with a small dome with earplugs on the head. Hands rests on a keyboard. Gösta get the impression that Menji receives messages via electrodes that are connected to her brain and she later transforms into writing with the sucker of the keyboard. He hears the conversation between Menji and the man in the chair. To describe Gösta Karlsson what then happened, "Everything is all right," responding Menji and smiles so that the white tendon are visible. Then the man turns against me and I recognize the same man, the guard, who prevented me to go near the craft. Now he has facial protection down in the neck. He has a sharp eye, something, protection, blend white tees and looks very friendly. A blue belt is visible around the waist where a pair of gloves is to be seen. The man, who seems preoccupied with the instruments, wears a black skullcap with wires that are connected by a kind of plugs in their ears. Around him is a large Mengmi Okenda instruments and man studying them intensely. "I thought I would get in contact with you and explain what we were doing when you saw us over there in the forest," he says. "When we were in our rotation, position, together with the large craft in the forefront, we happened for some incredible reason to come close to its turbine jet stream. Some more undeveloped SIFs use such a kind of jet, thrusts in planet's atmosphere. REM our craft is built to withstand most things, and likewise we have good protection of our forces. But the beam happened hit a cabin window and pass into the room where Luna and Jurian were. They were killed instantly, and we had to go down to repair the damage. That's when you saw us. We had first thought to bury the two dead on the spot so long, but we realized that it could cause problems, so we decided, therefore, to bring them to a sterile asteroid. We cut a number of pine branches that we packed them into, and we keep them now in a room in the ship. Menji have the guard job in the radio room and I am here. The others are to rest, said the pilot, driver, and then begins to explain how the ship is run, flown. We are moving at a speed of light and the vehicle is driven by 12 parallel connected quartz rods. I felt that I constantly had an uncomfortable falling sensation. You get a feeling that one is way up and falls down. It was just wondering when to strike and how it should feel. As if he had read my mind, then tells the driver, the falling feeling arises when traveling at the speed of light, but it's nothing dangerous. So, I look into the room where the two dead lie. Only the faces are visible, the rest is all hidden under pine boughs. Poor Luna, he says, she was one of the most beautiful girls you've seen. I see a deathly pale girl's face, but it's getting too much and just as I will shout, something wake me. But what an awakening. I have a splitting headache and is very thirsty. It was horrible. It was an experience that I hardly want to think about. They were there just deathly pale packed in spruce coffins with a pale, strange, gloomy light lit up. It was too much for me. I'm guessing that the contact was broken because it simply became too much for me. Rune comments here. Intuitive theory around these dreams. When the warden directed his apparatus against Gosta during the first meeting, he then took an energy footprint frequency picture of his astral body, which is an integral part of the physical body. When Gosta let himself to sleep, and yes, just fell asleep, his astral body was released, as always happens during normal deep sleep for all of us, in spite we have no memory of IT, because the memory is just attached to the physical brain. The only problem is that we normally have no memory transfers from the astral body. See Martinus symbol for this energy combination, mixture to understand this. The combinations of the basic cosmic energies. With his astral body released and with a photographed frequency footprint, so could the space people by a method of technical, telepathic way. Pull his astral body and so give him direct information and more explanation of what actually happened. Moreover, they could by technical, hypnotic methods ensure that the experience was connected into the brain consciousness, so that it could be passed on to the outer day, consciousness retrospectively, it to a degree be recollected. Everything done so that he might be able to further bring this information forth, too, at a later time, the book about him could be shared. Rune, ideas. New meetings. 5 days later, in the night to May 26th, those same events was repeated. Gosta feel the same strange feeling in his head and a strange heat spreading in the body as if a cold is to come. In the evening, Gosta Carlson once again see this mysterious camera with the oval lens. Also this time, he ends up in the cabin behind the pilot/driver. It's the same cabin, same pilots and the same instruments. It is as if Gosta never been away. He is on board what he will later will call the reconnaissance ship. This time, he feels no falling sensation. Now, I also took a nearer look at the chair where the driver sat, he says. In some way I remembered that there was something there that I should look more into. What I saw was a plastic pattern in relief. The pattern is reminiscent of a city, like any other, but the strange was that there were two very large buildings reminiscent of the pyramids of the Egypt. These were right near each other. The city, on the contrary, resembled New York or any other big city. It was like a drawing. I got the impression of a great city, very modern city, undoubtedly their hometown. Since happened the something I should just mention. I had a vision that I saw a city, a country, and they had a sun that was more violet than we have. But it seemed as if their home planet was some 10 light years away. Probably near to what we call Sirius. Maybe I saw it on his screen, but I do not really know. One of the instruments I saw resembled a tipper, track around and with beams in even intervals. Then there was another instrument that resembled a standard thermometer, something that moved up and down all the time. The driver looked very carefully at it. I think it had to do with the course. After a short while the driver turned against me, just like the first time, and said to me, "We now have arrived, and will leave the dead ones, here," he said, through the cabin window. I watched the craft had landed on a rocky and desolate place. Maybe it was an asteroid, but it can just have been somewhere else. The other crew had gone out. All had their hoods and gloves on. They placed the coffins of pine / sprigs of spruce, with the dead heads towards the center. Then they fell to their knees and raised right hands in a last salute. But no one was sobbing and crying. They just were serious. The dead were wrapped in sprigs of spruce with their faces visible and heads resting on a bed like of sprigs of spruce. They lay with their heads together in a sterile stony desert. A pale light lit up the place, but Goster could not remember that he saw any horizon or the sky. The pilot, driver himself turned to me and smiled his beautiful, white smile. Then they went on board again. Apostrophe, I was outside the ship. I watched the entire ceremony, when they carried them out, when they put them there, when they saluted and when they went away again. It was eerie. I do not like to see dead people. And here it was almost still more true than when you see it in the waking state. Though it's possible that I'm imagining just that, since the pilot, driver looked at me after the ceremony, it faded away and I became conscious on the outer level / here and now, level, again. This time I was not thirsty and had no headache. The day after the second dream, goes Goster Carlson back to the glade to look for more tracks. After a while he finds a grave, like hole 5, 10 meters from the landing, just behind the place of the fin. The hole is elongated with straight sides, 2 meters by 1.40, and the sand is up next to it. The grave is large enough to accommodate 3 people. I got a nasty feeling that this was made as a grave. Just next to it, a few hundred meters from the glade, there was a tree, gathering with the branches almost down to the ground. Here I saw that the branches was cut like with a sharp cutter had been used. The resin was new, so it must have been recently. I first thought it was a wood keeper who for some reason had done this job, but if so, he had never quitted the innermost bald bits. One may be wondering why they had packed the dead into pine boughs and not plastic or anything else. But I think it may be, out in space, maybe sprigs of spruce, has a different, better effect. What do I know? Somehow it seemed as if they were to lead my questions to some subjects, things that I really should have asked about. I took for example, never up. Some things he now refused to tell about still. One must beware of not make too much changes for the people, but says that 10% of what had been shown, he wants to keep for himself. The questions came to be about God and life. When Gostu asked what God was, he got the answer that there is a male and a female God. This is origin of all. When the master mentioned names of the two aspects of God, Gostu did not understand the words. In translation, however, they would mean he, or she, who govern over everything. When life is over, we get our next life depending on our actions. After what the master said, is registered every thought we have thought, every deed we have done, and accordingly we get our next life. He emphasized that what we call hell does not exist, physically, as it is an inner temporary state, without the penalty of incurable criminals is that they may be done as reactions, perhaps as lived on another planet under the most difficult situations. Each soul must be placed and live, it is entirely dependent on how we behaved during our previous life. There are so many planets, as the space has no beginning and no end, so a person's soul can end up at a hundreds of light years into space on a planet, just as these two decide for us, I could not help but ask my friend if there are some simple evidence that these laws really exist, and his answer was, "Gosta, at least you know now that the whole space with suns, moons, planets and more, all the time moves according to fixed laws. Remember that as soon as there are laws, there must always be a legislator. It is that simple." Then I asked a question that was about similar to this: if it is so that there is someone who can create and do all this stuff, then why are we not created so that, from the beginning, we can avoid all suffering and struggle, just from Stone Age until now? Then answered the commander, "Take the example of a large oak. Why is the oak from the beginning a small seed?" And then he said something I'll never forget: "Think of how you have been formed. As small sperm grains that you can barely see and a small egg. In that contains all of you. Do not you think that is strange? What do one answer to that?" I could not. It was a science that I just was dumb into. These people we are talking about here, they are so far ahead of us and can do infinitely more than we can. They had a completely different view of it all. We are really incredibly stupid. I feel so stupid that it is not wise. A trivial message is to come from a human being from another planet, it may seem. But Gosta did not perceive it such. Instead, he continued to ask questions that otherwise he never would ponder on. About prayer and answers to prayer. For example, when I took up the theme, and asked if we could really get an answer to prayer, he replied that it was possible, but only got what we asked for, if it was practical, and possible. Dot to our learning slash lessons. Come, first to remember that a prayer should always be done by the concentrate brain, mid. It will do no good if you, with your mouth, formulate your wishes, while the brain is set to something completely different. It is through the brain's wavelengths you are in contact with him or her. He told me, "Then do fold hands in the same way as we do, then they pray by speaking through the brain. Our natural heavenly, Father and Mother, you who decides over everything and everyone." The prayer ends with the words, "For all the good you have done to me in the past day, I thank you with all my heart and life, essence." So the pilot, master told me, that their prayers went by. Gosta's view of religion is different from the state church. It has also been colored by his interest in beekeeping. In a newspaper interview in 1957 he speculates over if the heavenly manna that according to the Bible rained on the Israelis in the deserts, could have been a pollen rain from the trees. The best possible food thus. He believes in a comprehensive plan for the whole universe by a creator. Everything has a meaning and seeks perfection. Nothing happens by chance. The soul is reborn endlessly. Next time your soul handed over to a completely different person, perhaps a child born on a planet far out in space, and so life continues that way. It's not over, when a man dies, but on the contrary, to be a continuation which is even better. You and I and our all living beings have something called brain wavelengths that are in contact with nature, God, or whatever you want. What is the highest and have many names, but unquestionably is, because all cannot be a coincidence. It records every action you made, every thought you have thought, and you just get the credit for it in the next life. Remember this, he got in 1946, car 70 years ago, then long before thoughts on reincarnation and similar were very far out, here in the West, materialistic Scandinavia. Rem, CS ask slash comment, a type of karma, in other words. Have you got insight into this by those people in the craft, something in that way? But I cannot draw any conclusions and I will not go on before I get into those things, as you may offend the church, as one encounters everywhere. Everyone can think what he wants. The highest goal is that people will gradually be able to reach this God. CS. So the whole universe is related, exactly. At one point Gosta Carlson asked why landings does not happen more often and more openly. The answer was that we are far behind their civilization, says Gosta. They have passed all stages, so can fully live by the Ten Commandments. They have solved all the problems of fiscal life and turned their planet into a veritable paradise without the diseases, starvation and otherwise, misery and with a much longer lifespan, but they must not intervene either against us or other planets with the same civilization, level as slash like ours, so we must decide our own fate. But also some practical problems, like our illnesses and the difference in our planet's oxygen content, makes a landing, living here, impossible. Their overflights of our planet is part of their task in the same way as many others. Gösta Karlsson's own theory on why the crew was in the vicinity of the Earth in 1946, is that it had been lured there by our nuclear weapons. Bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki on 6 and the 9th of August 1945, can, according to him, have been recorded by space people far out in space. The blasts may have made them anxious about our future. But despite these thoughts, either Gösta himself or the Master, took up the subject of nuclear weapons during their talks. Something that would otherwise seem natural after such a long journey. Instead were talks about philosophical questions. You should know that much of what the Master said, I do not understand still, says Gösta when I ask him. Personally, I had of course, no interest in such things. Then I kept on with the struggle for my own existence. It was more than I could manage. After his contacts have Gösta Karlsson also become convinced that man, has for once come into being, outside of this Earth. The craft he encountered in the clearing was manned by our distant relatives. But only the white race originated from space, says Gösta. Well, to info from the contact were Menthoin. 87, also the predecessors of the Black, actually came here first, http://galactic.no/rune/colraiser2.jpg, http://galactic.no/rune/colraiser2.jpg and Ivton Norwegian on http://www.galactic.no/rune/jordfs.html and if to deep, search, read on link. http://www.galactic.no/rune/thing.html, the crew's genes are packed with the same information as ours. If we look at how it is in Africa, for example, Negroes do not build airplanes, jet engines and nuclear weapons. They do not have this innate as we have. Therefore I think that we, the white, has never arisen here on this planet. We have come here and brought the legacy with us. Negroes, on the other hand, grew up here. Of course there are those who have moved to the United States and learned things there, but it's not the same. They haven't it in their genes. All experiences are concentrated around the commander, the men who directed the strange camera towards Gösta Karlsson at the first meeting in the glade and then met him welcome in the first dream. The master, captain, pilot, is the one who gives Gösta Karlsson all the information, answer his questions and make contact with him. In the summer of 1947, a year later, Gösta Karlsson finds a curious triangular stone in the glade when he returned to look for more lost items. After one of their nightly meetings, or seances as he calls them, he sees suddenly the master's face on the stone itself. But Gösta Karlsson also got to see how the master's personal room looked. Not on the little ship that had the emergency landing in the clearing, but on a larger mothership far out in space. And there he experienced amazing things. The mothership. We are at the beginning of February 1948. Picture from that time in Sweden below. The events that have occurred since the May 18, 1946, meeting with the craft in the Vegeham forest, I have now had ample opportunity to be amazed of. I have become more and more clear that the peculiarities which I suffered, must depend on very special reasons. I often compliment me that I am pretty rough and neither believe in hell or the trolls, but now I have to wonder about those events. Among other things, that I did finish my job at the state railways and instead began to work with medicine from plants. I've started to get ideas that I do not really master, understand. But I attribute my interest as beekeeper, as the direct reason. This day I begin again to feel extra weird. Same symptoms as on previous contacts with the crew. I'm half asleep anyway, and then I suddenly see the lens in UFO, man's unit, apparatus, and I stand behind him in the craft. I see the chair he was sitting in. I recognize the plastic patterns of a city with two huge pyramids, and so he wends toward me. The same face, same dress with the little hat, with two plugs in the ears and the same Venligo appearance. Goster, it is now time for us to dock with the Mothercraft, and I think you might be interested. Only art, Ilu, not from book. I watch all the incomprehensible instruments in front of his table, the blackboard slash instrudot table, on which they're at all the time. Messages comes in a completely incomprehensible language. I see instruments which resembles an illuminated, round tip a track, and so I experience the same outlandish falling feeling that he declared is from we are moving at light speed or even faster. At the same time, he speaks with a girl who appears on a screen. The image is three-dimensional, and she sits up on a strange instrument with both hands and fingers on a keyboard. She smiles so beautifully, showing off dazzling white tooths, and answer him in an incomprehensible language. The master has previously explained to me that they keep in touch with their home planet and with the mothership through a system that imitate the human thought. Otherwise one would not make contact, as you move as fast as or faster than light and a transmitted signal's speed. In other words, the radio signals should then all the time be removing, and could so not catch up. Radio signals is long since outdated, and there is of course one of the reasons that we on Earth can never perceive their communication that must be just as effective. Then begins a red light to start flashing, and I hear a signal, first in repetition and then along. It is our mothership's magnetic beam which now catches us. Now everything is done automatically, and we just have to follow. I notice that the turbine noise on the craft has stalled. I see the whole crew to stand by the entrance. Everyone looks cheerful and happy, and everyone is dressed in spacesuit, but without the little hat used here, with earplugs. Just like our own pilots, all have a bag, surprisingly similar to our own. I can for my life not to remember or pronounce the name of the leader I always meet first, so for convenience I call him Brony. The strange is that while I understand his speech, is the rest of the crew's talk totally incomprehensible. So we are arrived, there, he says, and the hatch with ladder folds down. We were taken home by a very strong magnet beam that automatically lands our craft within the parent, mother, vessel. We must pass through the strong force field that surrounds the mothership, and also around all of our vehicles, and also constitutes a defense and is speed increasing. This entire landing maneuver has been quite imperceptibly, and must be a marvel of precision with these amazing speeds. I see that we are on a sharply lit ship deck. There are four more vessels of the same type, but also two of nearly 20 meters in size. So goes the crew into an airlock which takes off their clothes, and put them into a large bag, then into a shower, and from there they come out in a row. All are clothed, and the girls are now in a gorgeous floral blouse that goes up to the neck, and trousers of the same model that we have seen from Turkey. They stop at the ankles and then with sandals on his feet. We on our planet would probably say that it was the most sexy clothes we've ever seen. Again, was in 46. The men are dressed in a half-length jacket and something similar to pantyhose, and so sandals. My first vision is to be reminiscent of the old Roman legionnaires, shapely, strong and certainly very well trained. So, we reach the next deck. Here's a great welcoming party. You pass by a disc and then you are out there with their fellow travelers. First comes the girl I had seen before, and I learned that her name was Menji. Meanwhile, comes two small dogs from the recipient group, at the busy fuss, and are jumping up in the arms of her. It is apparently her dogs, and for me they resemble a race that we have ourselves and called Papillon. Among this large group, I notice that no male crewmen have a beard or are bald. Then the group is suddenly divided. All falls on their knees and a wagon covered with some sort of floral fabric comes in. Those on the catafalque looks to be children. It is our two fallen comrades Luna and Jurian that are now being taken on board, says Brony that I perceive. It turned out that the incident was due to a navigational error. We flew en route with a larger vessel first and two others just behind.